precisely on time. And as always, it's wrong to say that to the people who are already here. Also, there are two handouts, so if you don't have one, if you don't have copies, pick them up from here. Let's start. As I said, there are two handouts. One of them, titled About This Class, is full of administrative details and also quite a lot of ideology, mathematical ideology. But you see, we should really start with something real. So the only administrative thing I will say right now, I will postpone reading out this handout until later today, and the only administrative thing I will say right now is that everything is on the web, and if you do a web search, then search for my name, and if you haven't seen my name before, you are hereby introduced to it. It's Dror Bar-Natan, and pronunciation is unimportant. And then after you search for that, you go to classes, and then, so within my website, and then you go to, well, it's kind of obvious, this one. Okay? And everything I will say will be over there as well. Pick up a copy of the handouts. Okay, so this said, let's start with mathematics, okay? So, and again, deeper ideology will follow. So the first thing that I want to do today is to prove that the so-called trefoil knot, so this is the so-called trefoil knot, is different from the unknot, okay? And in doing this, I will have to introduce, well, one cute construction, but also several of the deeper techniques that will be used later on in this class. So this is my first purpose, to show that these two are different. Now, intuitively, you know, if you've ever tied something, you know these two are different. But how good is your intuition? So, well, here are a few examples, and they're also on your handout, just to show you that the intuition is not so clear, it's not so obvious. So, here is, for example, well, if you look over here, and it might be a bit hard to see on the screen, but it's also on your handout. Okay, so here is a famous example by, I think, Ken Millett. And you can stare at it for about an hour. And after an hour, you will finally realize what needs to be done to show that this one actually is equal to that one. Okay? So if you stare at it for a long time, you know, you just don't realize what can be done to simplify it. On the other hand, this one, which looks almost the same, okay, I mean, the projection is in fact the same, But say over here, this one is over, so this line is over that line, and over here it's the other way. It's here. So these, which one was flipped? Sorry, I guess these two.
Yes.
Well, one of the crossings around here was flipped, so that's a different knot. And in fact, this appears to be simpler, because if you look at it very quickly, you see that there are some things you can do, like you can pull this kink. You could pull this kink over here up, and then you can untwist it, and it looks simpler. But in fact, this one is different from that one. If I remember right, it's been years since I looked at this example, but if I remember right, this one is actually the trefoil. Now, having shown you this, why would you be so sure that you can start from the unknot, mess it up very, 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 to be something very, very, very complicated? For example, you could mess it up to be as complicated as this. This, in fact, is the unknot, messed up very much, okay? And then maybe you could unmess it in a different way to get here and then here. Okay, so maybe these two are equal. I mean, if we don't prove it, we don't know it. So I should prove, okay? Now, in fact, at some point, people tabulated all knots, and one famous tabulation is the so-called Rolston table of knots, and at some point, the Rolston table of knots consisted of 251 knots. I think nowadays it has exactly 250. And the reason the number dropped was that sometime in the 70s, so that I'm not exactly sure about the tabulation. I mean, I think the Rolston tabulation is from the 60s, but it actually builds on data that existed from like 50 years before. So I mean, for many, many years, the tables included these two knots, which in the 70s got named the Perko pair, because a guy called Perko noticed that they're actually the same. Okay? So, and again, you're welcome to stare at these for a very long time, and it will be very hard to tell that they are the same. Okay? So it really is required to have a technique to show that things are different. Okay? So, and again, this is sort of, the main reason I'm starting with this is because I want to start with content and not with administration. We'll get to the administration later. Okay? So, let me tell you how to prove the simplest possible way that these two are different. So we will define something that is called an invariant of knots. Okay? And an invariant of knot is just a function I. Well, the word invariant is just a synonym for function. Okay? But sort of we think of it in a slightly different way. It's a function that doesn't change under various things. Okay? We'll see what the things are in the case of knots. So, it's a function I that goes from the set of all knots. Well, this is a set in which the elements are very hard to tell apart. Okay? Into some other set in which the elements are easier to tell apart. So maybe this set could be numbers. Maybe it could be polynomials. Okay, something where it's very easy to test whether two things are different or not. In fact, for this case, the set that I will use here will be a two-element set. And it will be, the two elements will be called true and false. Okay? Now, if I will be able to show that such a function exists and is well defined, and furthermore, that this function maps the trefoil, so the function I maps the trefoil to the value true and the R0 to the value false, well, since the outputs are different, the inputs are different, and we've proven that the two nodes are different. So the whole challenge is to construct such a well-defined invariant. Now, let me tell you what this invariant will be. So, actually, I will not define it on nodes. I will define it on node diagrams. So let D be a node diagram. Okay, so what's a node diagram? A node diagram is a picture like this drawn in the plane. Okay, so this is not a node. A node is, this is the usual thing that always happens to me. When I have to demonstrate a node, I have to find a string. So a node is something that happens in R3. Okay, here is a node. Okay, now you could project the knot on the plane and draw the projection, making sure to sort of mark the over and the under sides of crossings, and that's a knot diagram. But the knot diagram is not a knot, right? Like, you know, if I could get it a bit further twisted and project it again, and now it will be a much more complicated picture, but it's still the same knot. Okay, so as a start, I will define a function on node diagrams rather than on nodes. Okay, now this function will be the truth value of a certain statement. Okay, so I will put a statement over here, and this function will be the truth value, whether the statement is true or false. Hence, this function is valued in the two-element set T, F. Okay? So here is the statement. The statement is the arcs of D. So what are the arcs of D? Well, the arcs, for the purpose of this construction, will be the things that you draw with your chalk without raising your hand, okay? So the line going from here around to here. So this is one arc. The line going from here all the way through here. So all the way from here to here, this is arc number two. And finally going from here to here, this will be arc number three. So this particular picture has three arcs in it. Okay? Well, this one has only one arc. Okay? So, the statement is the arcs of D can be colored in three colors. Let's call these colors red, green, and blue. Okay? Such that, basically I'm saying the statement is I can color the arcs in three colors. I just colored one in blue. Let's see how to color the others later on. Such that, the following two properties hold. One, every crossing, I don't know how to spell crossing, so this is what I will use for the word crossing from this point on. Okay? And a crossing is, one of these places when an arc goes or cuts another line into two arcs. Okay? So in this picture, there are three crossings. One, two, three. In this picture, there are zero crossings. In this picture, I believe there are 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay? So, every crossing is either a monochromatic, monochromatic. Monochromatic just means, so let's explain this. So what's monochromatic? It means that the three arcs that are involved in it are all colored the same way. Okay? Or a trichromatic. So trichromatic just means that all three colors appear. So if this one is red and this one is blue, then the remaining one must be green. Okay? But I skipped the bichromatic case. So I'm not allowing, so this is okay, this is okay. However, it is not okay to have a crossing that will be colored in just two colors. Okay? So this is not okay. Okay? So that's condition number one. And condition number two, I suppose I have to make this more room for my statement. Condition number two is that all colors appear. Okay? So let's see. Can you color this diagram of the trefoil knot so that in each crossing it's either monochromatic or trichromatic, and so that all colors appear? Well, let's try. First of all, let's test if we can do it so that this crossing is monochromatic. Well, if it's monochromatic, then this will be blue, and this will be blue, and then everything is blue, so not all colors appear, so that's not a good coloring. Okay, now showing that there is a bad coloring doesn't show that the statement is false. The statement is the arcs of D can be colored. Okay, so there exists a good coloring. Let's see if there is a good coloring. Well, my first attempt failed. Let's try another. So let's make this one trichromatic. So this will have to be red, and this will have to be green. But then I have to color the whole arc red, so the whole thing here is red. And likewise, the whole arc here is green. And, well, I look at this picture, and in this crossing I have red, blue, green. In this crossing I have red, green, blue. Well, that one, by construction, was trichromatic. So all crossings are trichromatic. The conditions here are satisfied. The statement is true. The value of I on this knot is true. On this knot diagram is true. Well, what's the value of I on this knot diagram? Well, since this one has a single arc, it must be colored in a single circle, in a single color. So therefore, I will never be able to satisfy the all colors appear condition. And so no coloring of this will be valid. And so the statement is false. Okay? Well, so I've shown that I gets different values here and here. What I haven't shown is that I is an invariant of knots. Okay? So for this, I have to quote a theorem by Rademeister. So, theorem, and it's called the Rademeister theorem. And later on in this class, I will explain why I will never prove this theorem. Okay, if you want, it's the axiom that starts my style of knot theory. Okay? It can be proven, but I so much dislike it that I will never do it. Okay? Anyway, here's what the theorem says. Well, it says that two diagrams, let's call them D1 and D2, represent the same knot. Well, I haven't quite defined what a knot is. right? I told you it's an embedding of a circle in R3, modulus certain allowed motions. I didn't quite formalize what these allowed motions are. And the formalization is, in fact, not obvious. But it's more or less intuitively obvious, okay? So at the moment, I will skip the formalities and move on with the statement. So anyway, two diagrams, D1 and D2, represent the same node if and only if they differ by a sequence, a finite sequence, a finite sequence of so-called Rademeister moves. Okay? And here are the Rademeister moves. There are three types of Rademeister moves. Rademeister move number one says that if somewhere inside the diagram you see a kink, you can get rid of it. You can undo it. Okay? And vice versa. So if you see an unkink, you can kink it. So just to see how it fits with the intuition, so intuitively, what I'm saying, well, or you know, if it, here's a piece of string, I can create a kink in it, in the projection, okay? And intuitively, since I haven't given a formal definition of a knot, I cannot refer to a formal definition, but at least intuitively, it's the same knot, okay? Likewise, there is a Rademeister 2 move, which says that if you have two crossings that somehow, well, one is positive and one is negative, the formalities will come later, okay? But basically, if one strand, if one piece of string goes over another piece of string, and you have such a pair of crossings, well, then you can get rid of this pair of crossings. So this is the same as that. And again, our R3 intuition makes it completely obvious. Okay? And finally, the Rademeister 3 relation says that if you have, suppose you have a crossing, and then you have another strand which goes behind the whole picture. Okay, so I have sort of the main crossing here, and another strand going way behind. Okay? So now I can, well, I mean, if you want, I'm not sure how to, I need sort of three hands to do it, and I only have two. But if one crossing is here, and the other strand is way behind, I can push the other strand up behind the crossing. Okay? So I can move this to be, gee, I run out of space. You know what? Let's do it tightly here. So this is equal to, instead of this one going under, it will go over. Okay, or above. So again, is the three-dimensional intuition obvious? Okay, good. So as I said, I will not prove this theorem, at least not right now. Okay? So what I still have to do, so okay. Well, so I have this function I, so maybe I'll put it here. I have this function, well, I have the set of all knot diagrams. Every knot diagram represents a knot. So I have some forgetful map that maps knot diagrams to knots. And the Rademeister theorem tells you what the kernel of this map is. Okay? It tells you that knots are really equal to knot diagrams modulo a certain equivalence relation, where this is equivalent to that, this is equivalent to that, and this is equivalent to that. I have a function going from here to the two element set, true and false, and I have to prove to you that this function is actually well defined over here. So I have to prove to you that if I have two diagrams representing the same knot, and I compute I of the two diagrams, it will be the same. Okay? In other words, all I have to do is to show that I is invariant, I does not change when I apply Rademeister moves. All I have to show is that I of the left-hand side is equal to I of the right-hand side for all three Rademeister moves. Are you with me? Is it clear what I have to do? Okay. So, let's do that. So, I will not do it in too much detail, but I'll show you the key points. So, first of all, why is it that I of this is equal to I of that? So, just a word about my notation. So, when I draw a piece of a knot inside an equation, I really mean there is a whole big knot or a whole big knot diagram around this piece. It's the same knot diagram on the left and on the right, and therefore I'm not bothering to write it. So I'm only showing, I'm only drawing the parts that change. Okay, so this really stands for a big knot diagram, maybe as big as this one. Okay, and this one stands for the same except at the location shown. Okay, so anyway, can anybody help me? Why is I of the left equal to I of the right?
The one on the right will have to be one color. So the one on the left will have a monochromatic crossing.
Right. Okay, so suppose this one had a good coloring. I never formally defined a good coloring, but I think you know what I mean. A good coloring is a coloring which is mono or trichromatic at every crossing, and all colors appear. So suppose this one had a good coloring, necessarily this line will have to be colored in one color. It's a single arc. Take that one color and use it to color this whole area on the left, on the left. Keep the rest of the coloring the same between here and here. And if that was a good coloring, meaning if all three colors appear here, well, they do not appear here, but they will appear in the rest of the picture. So if all three colors appeared here, since I just copied them, they will appear here. So I've shown that if this is true, then this is true. I also have to show that if this is true, then that is true. But you see, if the statement is true, for this diagram, well, you see, in this particular crossing, only two arcs are involved, right? Because it's only this arc and that arc. So it cannot be trichromatic. It has to be monochromatic in a good coloring. So if this one has a good coloring, it has to be monochromatic, and the other two colors will appear elsewhere. Okay? So therefore, it will be monochromatic, and then you can copy and use that one color on the right, and copy all the color, all the rest of the coloring to the rest, and you've shown that this is true as well. Okay, are you with me? Good. So next, I want to show that I of this is equal to I of that. So I want to show invariance under the second Rademeister move. And again, there are two things to check, right? if the statement is true here, I have to show that it's true here and vice versa. So suppose the statement was true here. Well, there are two ways this could have happened. Either these two arcs are colored the same way in some coloring that exhibits, that proves that the statement is true. Either they're colored the same way. Well, if they're colored the same way, I will simply color the left-hand side with just one color. Okay? The same color. And then I have a good coloring of the left-hand side. What if they're colored differently? So what if this is red and this is blue? Well, how am I going to color the left-hand side? Well, my strategy would be to copy the coloring, okay? So I want to copy the rest of the coloring. I want to copy the outside, okay? If I want to copy the outside, I am forced to copy this point to this point. I am forced to color this point red because it has to be compatible with the rest of the coloring. Likewise, I am forced to copy this point blue, and I'm forced to copy to color this point blue, and I'm forced to color this point red. And therefore, this whole thing has to be red. These two have to be blue. I have to complete it to a legitimate coloring, and the only way to do it is to color this little arc green, so that these will be tricolored. And well, I've achieved what I wanted to do, so I've proven that if the statement is true here, it's also true here. Okay, now let's go the other way. So, suppose I know the statement is true on the left-hand side. So suppose I know I have a legitimate coloring of the left. Again, there are two possibilities. This point could either be colored the same way as that point, in which case, it clearly doesn't matter if it's red, green, or blue. So if it's red, the whole thing here has to be red. This has to be red, and now I have two colors the same, so that must be the same. And now again I have two colors the same, so that must be the same. So the whole picture is red, and then I will draw the other side in red. The other possibility is that the point on the left would be colored in one color, say red, and the one on the right will be colored blue. And again, this has to be red all the way because it's a single arc. If this is blue, it has to continue blue all the way to here. Now I have a crossing, so I have to use green here because it has to be trichromatic. Well, if this is green and this is red, this has to be blue again. And now, how would I color the right-hand side? Well, it's completely clear. I'm forced to use red and blue. And this is the point where it's really easy to make a mistake. I mean, I'm tempted to write QED. Okay? Sorry, I mean, I'm tempted to do the same for R3, sorry. You really have to go through the same procedure and it's kind of boring for R3, and then I'm tempted to write QED. But there is something a tiny bit wrong in my argument. Can somebody point out what I did? What's wrong in what I did?
You don't know that you're using the yellow?
No, it's green.
Green, sorry, yeah, green.
Sorry. Well, at least it's...
the other color.
Yes, right. So you see, going from here to here, I lost the color. This hasn't happened before. Everything that I did before never lost the color. But going from here to here, I lost the color. So maybe that was a legitimate coloring, and now this one is illegitimate. Okay? Okay, if you found a bug, can you also resolve it?
Oh, I haven't found that yet.
Can somebody help me? Yes?
Well, the red and the blue sort of across again.
Right.
Not those exact.
Right.
But eventually.
Right. The point is that this is all a part of a single knot. So this is the only place in the argument where I have to go global and look outside of the little neighborhood that I'm drawing. This is all a part of a single knot. So red has at some point to connect back again to blue. Now, it can't be that the whole interval between red and blue is red, because this we start at red and we end at blue. So at some point we have to switch colors. Maybe we will switch colors many times along the way, but there has to be at least some place where this arc gets cut and we switch a color. But if we switch a color, we're using all three colors. The only legitimate way to switch a color is to use all three colors. So even though green does not appear here, it must appear somewhere else. And therefore, if this was legitimate, this is legitimate too. Okay, and then the rest of the proof is boring. So you just go through the same argument for R3, and in fact, it's easier. No, there is no color losses anywhere. And everything works. Well, QED. We've shown that the trefoil is actually different from the unknown.
Are you with me?
Is it okay? Am I going too fast, too slow? Okay. So I think I really should do the administrative thing, but I think I would. But let's do something more fun before. Okay. So unfortunately, the argument that I just gave is ridiculously insufficient. Okay? So I can tell two knots apart, but if I had three knots, since my target set has only two elements, if I had three knots, I will never be able to show that all three are different. Right? So, and in fact, there are many, many knots. So here are the first 250 knots in the Rolfson table. Drawn as candies, and well, you know, how on earth am I going to show that they're all different, especially given that Perko at some point found that it may have been this one or that one. I mean, the table used to have another entry in which probably this one appeared twice in two different presentations, in two different diagrams, two different pictures. So how on earth am I going to show that all of these are different? Likewise, well, okay, here is So I think your handout, sorry, I'm going to the wrong place. I think your handout shows another more readable presentation of these 200, presentations of these 250 knots. And if you look at these, then how on earth are you going to show that all of these are different? Okay? So I want to introduce a much stronger invariant, and with it we will nearly be able to show, we will come closer to showing that all of these really are different. So, what I'm going to describe is the so-called Kaufman bracket, or the Jones polynomial. It's ridiculously simple. Yet it was only found in the 80s because nobody expected it. Somehow nobody guessed anything like that. Okay? And when it was found in the 80s, it was found in a more complicated way by Jones. And then a few years later, somebody called Lou Kaufman noticed that it actually has a way simpler definition. So let me give you the simple definition. Okay? So here it is. The idea is to, well, we're going to define a so-called bracket. So we're going to define the bracket of a diagram. So bracket just means I of t. I'm just using a different notation. Okay? And it's going to be a certain polynomial. And when I start, it will be a polynomial in three variables, a, b, and d. But later we will see that we have to lose some of this information, okay? So it has less than three variables, okay? The way it is defined is as follows. First of all, we declare that the bracket of a crossing is equal to A times the bracket of, well, you see, if you have a crossing, there are two ways to get, well, there are more than two ways, but there are two ways to get rid of it. One way to get rid of it is to smooth it this way, and the other way to get rid of it is to smooth it the other way. So these are the so-called zero smoothing and one smoothing of the crossing. Okay? What's the difference between the two, or how do you tell apart the two smoothings? So say you are in this crossing, you travel on the, so think of it as a highway interchange, and you travel on the lower, sorry, if you start from the lower, so you start at, well, basically, you turn right, you start from the lower strand, you turn right at the interchange, okay, and you get this line of travel. Well, if you start on the other side, on the lower strand, and again you turn right in the interchange, you will get this line. Okay, so these two lines together make the one smoothing. So this is start at lower strand and turn right. And for the other one, you just start at the upper strand. So if you start at the upper strand and turn right at the interchange, well, you'll be making this turn. Likewise, if you start at the upper strand and turn right at the interchange starting here, you will be making this turn. So you will be creating the zero smoothing. Well, so far I only told you what the zero smoothing is and what the one smoothing is. Okay? Now I have to explain this equation. So the equation says that the bracket polynomial, which I haven't yet fully defined, will satisfy a certain recursion relation. When you apply it to a knot that has a crossing, okay? So use the same convention as before. If I draw only a part of the knot, it means that it's that everywhere where that part is drawn, it's the rest is the same. So in other words, complete this picture to a big knot, complete this picture to a big knot in the same way, and complete this picture to a big knot in the same way. So now I have three knots in the picture, one, two, and three. And the relation says that the bracket polynomial of the first is equal to A times the bracket polynomial of the second times B plus B times the bracket polynomial of the third. Now, this this recursion relation, yes?
So the bracket is on D, which could be a diagram of several knots.
Sorry?
D could be a diagram of several knots.
So, right, in fact, the moment I cut it apart, this could be a so-called link. So it could be several circles knotted, or it could be a picture made out of several circles. And in fact, that's the next thing that I will say. Okay? So, you see, this picture, or this recursion relation, almost completely determines the bracket, right? Because suppose you had a knot with many crossings, I don't know, this one, 1, 2, 3, whatever, 5, 10 crossings or so. What you could do is you could use this recursion relation to replace the first crossing by a zero smoothing or a one smoothing, and then you will have expressed the bracket of this knot as a sum of brackets of two simpler knots with one crossing less. But then you could do it again and again and again and again until you have no crossings left. Okay, so you can reduce any picture to a linear combination with coefficients which are polynomials in A and B of brackets of knots that have no crossings. But what are knots that have no crossings? A knot that has no crossings, and sort of given that I broke up the circle, or I could have broken up the circle in one of these, in some of these moves, a knot with no crossings will just be a union of cycles. Well, maybe they could be even be nested. Okay? So the other axiom for the definition of the bracket will be that if you have k circles, the value of that is d to the power k. Okay? Let's check it. Let's see how it works. Okay? So just as just to see that we understand what is going on, let's compute the bracket of the so-called Hopf link. So the Hopf link, well, I'm actually starting right at the start with something which is not a knot, okay? Something that has two components, okay? Let's compute the bracket of this thing. So first of all, I have to do the smoothing thing to the upper crossing, okay? So I will get A times, so the lower crossing remains the same. The upper crossing, well, if I try to superimpose this picture on this picture, I find that the zero smoothing is this smoothing. The rest I just copy, so I get A times this, plus B times, now I have to do the opposite thing to the top crossing, and again copy the rest. So I get A times this plus B times that. Now, let's use the recursion relation again. So this is, a picture just like this. So I can replace it by A times a zero smoothing. So I'll get A times the bracket of, well, if I replace this by a zero smoothing, I'll get this. And then I have to copy the rest. So the rest is just this plus B times, now let's do a one smoothing, so this is the one smoothing and I have to copy the rest, so the rest is more or less that, and I've, no, what am I doing, sorry, I'm still opening this, sorry, so here is the one smoothing and I have to copy this, so It's like that. Right? And now plus B times, and I have to play the same game over here, so it's A times zero smoothing completed plus B times one smoothing completed. And now what is this? So the first one is A squared times, this has two cycles, so I get D to the to D squared. So A squared, D squared, plus A times B times, this is a single cycle, so D. So plus A, B, D, plus A times B times a single cycle, so A, B, D. A second time, plus B, B, so B squared, D squared. And, well, maybe you can simplify a bit, but that's what we got. Is it time for a break? Yes. So, after the break, we will try to see what happens to the Kaufman bracket under the Rademeister moves. And we will find that it is, well, not quite invariant, but for the right choice of A, B, and D, it is invariant. And furthermore, it's the so-called Jones polynomial, and it's a rather strong invariant. So let's meet again in 10 minutes.